of Chinese garden economy by means of which he explains many characteristics of the empire. Fuchs then turns to the new sculpture, which originates under the Tang rule. The monumental richification of the Han style becomes loosened. The interest of the anonymous masters who created the pottery is now intent upon the movements of men and animals. Time, Fuchs elaborates, awoke from its grand slumber in those centuries in China. For trade always means an intensified life and movement. Hence, life and movement had to come primarily into the art of the Tang period. This is a first characteristic one encounters. While, for example, the whole demeanor of the animals of the Han period is still heavy and monumental in their whole habitus, those of the Tang period exhibit everything lively, every limb is in motion. Tang Plastic, page 41. This mode of consideration rests on mere analogy, movement in trade as in sculpture. One might almost call it nominalistic. His attempts at making transparent the reception of antiquity in the Renaissance remains equally trapped in analogy. In both epochs, the economic basis was the same. Only in the Renaissance, this basis found itself on a higher stage of development. Both were founded on trade of commodities. Erotische Kunst, 1, page 42. Finally, trade itself appears as the subject of the contemplation of art, and Fuchs says, trade has to calculate with given qualities, and it can only apply concrete and verifiable quantities. That is how trade has to approach the world and things if it wants to control them economically. Consequently, its aesthetic consideration of things occur in every regard in a realistic mode. Tang Plastic, page 42. One may disregard the fact that a realistic representation in every regard cannot be found in art. In principle, one would have to say that any connection appears problematical, which claims equal validity for the art of ancient China and for that of ancient Holland. Indeed, a connection does not exist in this manner. A glance at the Republic of Venice suffices. Venice's art flourished because of its trade. Yet the art of a Palma Vecchio or Titian or of Veronese could hardly be called realistic in every regard. The only aspect of life which we encounter in this art is a festive and representative one. On the other hand, working life in all its stages demands a considerable sense of reality. From this approach, the materialistic cannot draw any conclusions as to the manifestation of style. Page 360. 31. Karl Kautsky, Darwinismus and Marxismus, Die Neue Zeit, 13, Part 1, Stuttgart, 1895, 7-10. 32. H. Laufenberg, Dogma und Klassenkampf, Die Neue Zeit, 27, Part 1, Stuttgart, 1909, 574. Here the concept of self-activity has sunk to a sad state. The heyday of this term is the 18th century, when the self-regulation of the market was in its beginning, when the concept celebrated its triumph in Kant in the form of spontaneity as well as in technology in the form of automatic machines. 33. Caricature, 1, 312. 34. Erotische Kunst, 1, 3. 35. A. Max zur Frage der Organisation, 652. 36. Caricature, 2, 238. 37. Mehring commented on the trial ensuing from the weavers in the Neue Zeit. Parts of the defense speech have regained the actuality which they had in 1893. The attorney elaborated that he had to point out that the seemingly revolutionary passages in question are contrasted by others which are soothing and calming in character. The poet does not at all stand on the side of revolt insofar as he allows the victory of order by means of the intervention of a handful of soldiers. Franz Mehring, Entweder, Oder. Die Neue Zeit, 11, Part 1, Stuttgart, 1893, 780. 38. Honoré de Balzac, Les Cousins Pons, Paris, 1925, page 162. 39. Édouard Drummond, Les Héros et les Pitres, Paris, pages 107 through 108. 40. Gigi Gervinus, Friedrich Christoph Schlosser, Ein Nekrolog, Leipzig, 1861, pages 30 through 31. 41. This direction of Fuchs's work proved useful when the imperial prosecutor began accusing him of distributing obscene writings. An expert judgment naturally represented Fuchs's moralism with particular emphasis. This expert opinion was submitted in the course of one of the trials, all of which without exception ended in acquittal. It is the work of Feodor von Zobelitz, and its most important passage says that the following. Fuchs seriously considers himself a preacher of moral and an educator. This deeply serious understanding of life, this intimate comprehension of the fact that his work in the service of the history of humanity must be borne by the highest morality, is alone enough to protect him against the suspicion of profit-hungry speculation. Anyone who knows the man and his illuminate idealism would have to smile at such a suspicion. 42. This revision has been inaugurated by Max Horkheimer in his essay Egoismus und Freiheitsbewegung, Zeitschrift für Sozialforschung, 5, 1936, 161 and following. The documents assembled by Horkheimer corresponds to a series of interesting proofs on which the extremist Abel Bonnard bases his accusation of those bourgeois historians of the revolution from Chateaubriand quaintly calls Le École Administrative de la Terreur. See Abel Bonnard, Les Modernes, Paris, pages 179 and following. Page 361. 43, Der Maler Daumier, page 30. 44, N. Gutermann and H. Lefebvre, La Conscience Mystifiée, Paris, 1936, page 151. 45, Erotische Kunst, 2, part 1, 11. 46, same as above, 143. The moral historical representation of the Directory carries traits which are just about those of a popular ballad, Moritat. The terrible book of the Marquis de Sade, which is plates as bad as infamous, lay open in all shop windows, and Barras expresses the devastated fantasy of the shameless libertine, Caricature 1, 201 through 202. 47, Caricature 1, 188. 48, Max Horkheimer, Egoismus und Freiheitsbewegung, page 166. 49, Erotische Kunst 2, part 1, 283. Here, Fuchs is on the track of an important state of affairs. Would it be too rash to put into immediate relation the threshold between human and animal which Fuchs sees in the orgy with the erect posture? This allows for the unheard of occurrence in the phenomenon in natural history that the partners can look into each other's eyes during orgasm. Only thus an orgy becomes possible, but not by an increase in visual stimuli. Rather, the determining factor is that the expression of satiety and even impotence can now become an erotic stimulant itself. 50, Sittengeschichte 3, 234. A few pages later, this confident judgment can no longer be found. This is evidence of the force with which it had to be wrested away from convention. Rather, he says here, the fact that thousands of people become sexually excited when they look at a female or male nude photograph proves that the eye is no longer capable of perceiving the harmonious whole, but only the piquant detail. Same as above, 3, 269. If there is anything sexually arousing here, it is more the exhibition of the naked body in front of the camera than the view of nakedness itself. This is probably the notion which is intended by most of these photographs. 51, same as above, 3, 189. 52, same as above, supplementary volume, pages 53-54. 53, as ideology is the immediate production of interest, so for Fuchs, art is immediate sensuality. The essence of art is sensuality, Sinnlichkeit. Art is sensuality. Indeed, it is sensuality in its most potent form. Art is sensuality, become form, become visible. At the time, it is the highest and noblest form of sensuality. Erotische Kunst 1, page 61. Page 362. 54, Karikatur 2, 223. 55, Erotische Kunst 2, part 1, 390. 56, Der Maler Daumier, page 30. 57. This has to be compared with the following reflection. According to my observation, I think that the respective dominant elements of the artist's palette occur particularly early in his erotically pointed paintings. Here, these elements experience their highest luminosity. Die großen Meister der Erotik, page 14. 58, Der Maler Daumier, page 18, the famous art expert, a watercolor which occurs in several versions, has to be counted among the figures in question. Fuchs one day was shown a version of the painting which so far had been unknown. He was supposed to authenticate it. Fuchs picked up the main representation of the motif in a good reproduction and then began with an extremely instructive comparison. No deviation, not even the smallest one, remained unnoticed. Each one of these deviations had to be accounted for and had to be judged as to whether it was the product of the master's hand or that of impotence. Again and again, Fuchs returned to the original. Yet the way he did that seemed to indicate that he could have easily dispensed with it. He proved so familiar with its appearance in a way that can only be the case with a painting which one carried in one's mind for years. No doubt this was the case for Fuchs. Only because of this was he able to uncover the most hidden uncertainties in the contour. He seems the most insignificant color deviation of the shadows to identify the smallest derailing of the lines. Thus, he was able to put the painting in its place, not as a forgery, but as a good old copy, which might have been an amateur's product. 59, Dachreiter, pages 5 through 6. 60, Tongue-Plastic, page 44. 61, Honoré Daumier, 1, 13. One should compare these thoughts with Victor Hugo's allegorical interpretation of the wedding at Cana. The miracle of the bread loaves represent the multiplied increase of readers. The day that Christ stumbled on this symbol, he had a premonition of the art of the book printer. Victor Hugo, William Shakespeare, quoted by George Bartholdt, Le Pontif de la Demagogie, Victor Hugo, Paris, 1934, page 142. 62, Dachreiter, page 46. 36, Karikatur, 1:19. The exception proves the rule, a mechanical technique of reproduction served in the production of the terracotta figures. Among those many caricatures can be found. 64. See Erich Klosowski, Honoré Daumier, Munich, 1908, page 113. 65. Dachreiter, page 45.